you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and welcome to the Twilight Histories. Today, we have a time travel adventure for you by Kevin Valbenesi that takes place in Egypt, but it's not our Egypt. In today's adventure, Egypt survives the collapse of the Bronze Age and flourishes for thousands of years. If you have your own business, you know how important building a customer base is. When Kevin isn't creating incredible stories for us like the one you'll hear today, he's marketing businesses like yours through video, animations, and audio. Why not start with a cool Facebook animation to build up your audience? You can find Kevin at baroquemedia.com. And now, for today's story, May His Ka Endure Forever, by Kevin Valbenesi.
Hurry up and close that door. Took your sweet time, didn't you? It's fine. Well, it's not fine, but I'm not going to waste precious minutes elaborating on the perils of tardiness. Now then, I'm going to tell you where you're going. I'm sorry I couldn't inform you sooner, but I simply couldn't risk it. We lost a team down in some hellish version of ancient Mesopotamia, so there's been much scrutiny on everyone as of late. You're going to Egypt. Ancient Egypt. I've discovered a timeline in which this Nile-bound kingdom not only withstood the Bronze Age collapse, but flourished after it. This Egypt has been subject to the iron-fisted rule of a single dynasty for millennia, an impressive feat in its own right. This unbroken line of warrior pharaohs stretched their arms out to the four corners of their world and seized all within their reach. Egyptian domination is not absolute throughout this empire, but with mercantile and military colonies stretching from the Rock of Gibraltar to the Zagros Mountains, and from the Caucasus to the source of the Nile in Uganda, you could say that this is still Planet Egypt. The bellicose pharaohs who forged this empire are worshipped as living gods, and in return, they have lavished much glory and wealth on the cities of Egypt. The pyramids of Giza are pebbles compared to the monuments raised by the god kings of this Egypt. One could only imagine the treasures held in temples and burial chambers of unparalleled magnificence. Oh, time is slipping out of my hands. I shouldn't get carried off like that. There's some clothes and supplies in the corner over there. Please get ready while I finish your orientation. Oh, if the stiffs upstairs could hear me now. Now, your mission is simple. You're going to steal something for me. A researcher who visited this world reported an influx of goods into the city of Thebes. Many spoke to this researcher about the offerings made to the spirit of the first pharaoh. They say the high priests of the king's cult prepare a special offering every year on the anniversary of the pharaoh's passing. Can you imagine what it might be? Can you imagine how much someone might pay for something like that? I'm going to drop you into Thebes. You have 1 week to find and secure the pharaoh's treasure, whatever it may be. I can keep the time machine running for 30 minutes every day. Return to the spot you arrived from at midday, and I can bring you back. If you don't return after 2 weeks, I'll consider you dead. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it has to be. Now, step on the platform over here and I'll get you on your way. Oh, and a bit of parting advice. This is a land of the dead. Respect that fact, lest you join their number. You sit under the cool shade of rustling palm leaves, reclining in a basket seat, shuffling to find that perfect spot in the reed-stuffed pillow beneath you. Your eyes flutter as you wrestle with the urge to slip into a deep slumber. A curious aroma fills your nostrils, with the slightest hint of it jolting you to full and unrestrained consciousness. A beautiful young woman with olive skin and a flowing green dress kneels down next to you. She slowly lifts a bronze platter up toward you, offering a treasure you'd have never expected to find in the land of the pharaohs. Coffee. You take the tiny glazed clay cup and turn it in your fingers, admiring the black figure of a serpent coiling around the sides. From the deep red of the clay and the almost obsidian blackness of the snake, you figure that this cup is of Athenian design. You raise the cup to your lips and breathe in the earthy tones of the drink. You sip the coffee, and almost immediately, you feel an incredible surge of vitality. My dear, where on earth did you get this delicious drink? And this beautiful cup?
Well, we get the beans from the land south of Kush. As for the cups, I don't really know who makes them, but every so often, traders from Knossos come to sell them and other goods in the city of Tamiat.
How curious. Thank you. Finishing the drink, you lay the cup back on the bronze platter with care and nod to the hostess. She smiles and gestures to the empty cup. You nod, and she goes to leave. Oh, one more question, if you don't mind.
Ask what you like.
Where in the world do you hail from?
I'm from Arzashkun, but I am truly a child of Pharaoh.
She bows again and goes on her way, disappearing into a large tent at the edge of the grove. As the effects of the coffee kick in, you find yourself supremely aware of your surroundings. Everyone and everything comes in sharp, almost hyper-real focus. And you wonder if the bean is that potent, or if your host has added something else. Regardless, you look around the grove, surveying the scene. You're sitting in a grove surrounding a pool. Lotus flowers float on the water, disturbed only slightly by the fresh water trickling in from a small canal. Several basket chairs are arranged around the water, all shielded from the sun by the tall palms up above. And just beyond the tree line and the hostess's tent are the bustling and sun-baked streets of Thebes. All around you, there are men and women from the four corners of the ancient world. Close to the edge of the grove, a group of Kushite soldiers lounge about, sipping coffee and boasting about their exploits on the frontiers. Glancing back toward the pond, you see a young couple, both dressed in white, soaking their feet in the water. These young lovers are Greeks, or maybe Minoans, given their fair complexion and angular features, and their long, curly hair. And you also see a few native Egyptians, including one man dressed in a fine linen robe. You can't help but notice that this austere fellow has more rings than he has fingers, and that his makeup would make a beauty queen jealous. He reclines, as two stern attendants keep watch over him. There's movement at the edge of the grove, and your eyes snap over to get a better look. You see a man with a long, peppery beard and sunburned skin looking directly at you.
A glance over at the soldiers and the man you take for a priest confirms that nobody is paying the stranger any mind. So you wave him over. "May the sun shine upon you, friend." The man sits cross-legged in front of you, ignoring the seat right next to him. You nod to him, slightly perplexed, then signal to the young woman who you see returning with your coffee. You gesture for two, and then she bows and hurries back into the tent. "The sun be damned. I've been here less than a day, and I'm already burnt. Give me another week, and I'll look like you." You settle back into your seat, turning your head up to watch the dance of lights as the sun's rays pierce the canopy. "Now, did you find someone for me?"
"Yes, my friend, of course. But the information was very hard to come by, and there are few good hours left in the day."
You scoff, and without lingering on the man's insolence, you fish out a small bronze ingot from the nearby satchel and toss it to the man.
"Your generosity is like that of a king, my friend."
"And where's your friend who can bring me to the king?" The young woman returns, this time with two coffees. Your impertinent guest snatches the cups from the platter and makes a big show of handing one to you. And the young woman stands there, stunned. You mouth a thank you to her.
"Please forgive my intrusion, but if it is the king you're looking for, he's in the Delta. He never comes this far south."
"Don't trouble yourself, my dear. I'm planning a trip down the Nile, and I'm hoping to glimpse His Majesty before I return to my own country."
"Ah, what a lovely idea. Forgive me, sir. I should have asked earlier. Where do you come from?"
"Oh, I'm from somewhere far, far away. But not so far that word of Pharaoh and his splendid realm doesn't reach us." You sip your coffee and exhale in deep satisfaction. "Thank you, my dear." The young woman bows and goes to attend her other patrons. "Now then, where is this fellow?"
"The man you're looking for is called Memnon. He is a stonemason who lives near the spice market."
"Do you know his price?"
"He would not say exactly. He told me that anyone so desperate to visit that king should be willing to pay a king's ransom."
You sip your coffee and sink into your chair. Your informant leans back, propping himself up on his hands.
"We am happy to return to him with an offer. If you will cover my meal this evening."
"I'll settle the matter myself." You wave the man off, but he lingers, arms now crossed. His big black eyes bear down upon you. You can tell that the fellow means trouble, and so you act quickly to settle the matter. You draw back one of your sleeves to reveal a sheathed dagger tied to your forearm. The man's eyes go wide, and he tries to recoil, but you grab him by the beard and pull him in. "Go home and enjoy another day under the sun."
"What will you do, my friend? Those soldiers will make short work of you. Even a bandit cannot be struck down by a common man in Thebes."
The man sneers, his leathery skin creasing and cracking around his lips. You let him go and throw another ingot in his lap. "Our business is done here. Be on your way." The man makes a show of bowing and scurries out of the grove. You rise from your seat and walk over to the hut where the young woman is at work, brewing coffee. And you watch as she empties a deep brown ground from a mortar and into a small bronze cup. As she sets the bronze cup over a flame, suspending it between four metal rods. She adds water to the cup, and soon the mixture bubbles and boils. The aroma arrives immediately, and with great effect. The hostess notices you and smiles.
"Another, sir. I don't think that would be good for you."
You pull a bronze ingot from your satchel and lay it down next to her. You bow and walk out without another word.
The splendor of this new Thebes is exceeded only by its magnitude. To cross from one end to the other feels like a day's labor, especially under the merciless radiance of Ra's glowing disk. But the citizens of Thebes are fortunate, because Pharaoh's engineers have bent the life-giving Nile to their will, sending canals up and down the major streets. At regular intervals along your journey, you spy manicured ponds, groves, and even swimming pools, where the citizens of Thebes cool off and help themselves to wine, beer, and yes, coffee. You notice that the crowds are particularly dense at this time of day, and that several large caravans are moving with great urgency through them. Anxious royal officials in white linen skirts rush up and down the streets, constantly checking papyrus leaves. You lift a cloth covering a passing wagon and find it laden with clay jars, the sloshing sounds within indicating that they are carrying oil or wine. There are also troops in great numbers, carrying spears, axes, and sickle swords, all iron and all glistening in the midday sun. And these hardened men patrol about, inspect cargo, and manage the influx of one particular resource, slaves. Men of every shade, shape, and age are led in chains about the streets, ruthlessly beaten as they drop to their knees or collapse in exhaustion. You can't help but notice that many of the soldiers meeting out punishment look like they could be the brothers or cousins of these unfortunate souls. Egypt, it seems, is an equal opportunity slave master. Continuing for another 20 minutes, you finally reach your destination, the spice market. You smell it first, your nostrils flooded with cumin, coriander, pepper, cinnamon, thyme, and garlic. The air is so thick with the smell of spices that it actually feels denser. As you pass between two massive pylons, you are confronted with the colorful stalls and shops of the Theban spice market. The purveyors of these spices are almost all sub-Saharan Africans and Indians. You watch men in colorful robes haggle over pouches of fresh spice, colorful seeds and powders all piled up and weighed against various ingots and measures of grain. Large, muscular men carry in baskets of what must be the latest deliveries from the Red Sea coast. All the commercial activity is conducted under the watchful eyes of the goddess Hathor, whose grotesque bovine head mounts the elegantly carved bodies of several large statues. These silent guardians gaze inward at the market from every corner. You push your way through the crowd and scan the area, looking for whoever this Memnon fellow might be. You pull aside a young boy, and placing a small date in his hand, you pry him for information. "Hey kid, where can I find a fellow named Memnon?" The young boy points, and your eyes follow his gesture to a shadowy building 20 feet or so away. You give the boy another date for his trouble, and walk over to inspect the building. Peering through a window, your nose is greeted with the smell of cinnamon and coffee. Beautiful young women in flowing linen robes pour coffee into cups as old men sit about, fanning themselves with palm leaves and playing backgammon. All around the room, there are pots filled to the brim with cinnamon. Young girls scoop the spice from the jars and fill little packets with it. You notice that each packet is painted with the grinning profile of a hippopotamus. You pass through the portal and into the humid building. A young woman greets you right away and offers you an empty spot. "Actually, I was looking for a friend. Is there anyone called Memnon here?" The young woman's eyes dart about, not looking for anyone in particular, just set on avoiding your gaze. She says nothing, and you both stand there in silence for longer than is comfortable. You feel eyes on you, and confirm your suspicions immediately. Everyone is looking. It's mostly old men, but there are a few strapping young lads in the far corner of the room. Dark, muscular flesh, glistening in the faint glow of the light from the window.
"Who comes here looking for Memnon?"
An old, bald man speaks. He wears a deep purple robe and touches a palm leaf to his temple. You take him for a Cushite.
"Do these old ears lie? Or did this foreigner ask for Memnon?"
"I did. You know him?"
"Come and keep an old man company for a moment."
"Are you Memnon?" The man doesn't answer back. He just beckons for you to sit, gesturing with his palm leaf to an empty seat opposite him. You linger, and only sit down when the tough guys in the corner of the room take a step forward. You sit across from the old man and force a smile as a young woman pours you a cup of coffee and tops off the old man's. The old fellow raises his cup to you, and out of respect, you do likewise. You spit the coffee out, cringing, not having tasted an earthly bitterness like that in your life. The old man chuckles and finishes his cup in one go.
"Where are you from, stranger?"
"I'm from far away. Very far away."
"If you weren't, you'd have been smart enough not to walk into a place like this."
"How's that?" The man shoves a backgammon board in your direction. "Sorry, I don't know how to play." The old man waves a hand about, mumbling something under his breath. "Listen, I just need to speak to Memnon. Is that you?"
"What wickedness are you about here, sir?"
"What? What makes you think I'm up to no good?"
"I know the kind. I was a young man once, and I was always hungry for a way to make my fortune. Oh, the things I did for a little gold."
The old man laughs, reflecting on what must be a fond memory to him. You shift in your seat and glance over at the muscle in the corner of the room, noting their number and the likelihood that you can reach the door before they reach you. "I'm just here to satisfy my curiosity. I need a guide. Someone who knows their way around the valley." And the old man stops fanning himself. He sets the palm branch down and laughs out loud. The entire room empties, save for one young man. The young man pulls up a chair and joins you. His gaze is sharp, and he leans toward you, hands pressed firmly against his thighs. You play it cool, leaning against the wall and holding up your cup. A young woman runs in, fills your cup, and leaves right away.
"So you're Memnon, then?" "Yes, he is. He is my grandson."
The old man places a worn hand on Memnon's face.
"Now, I ask you again, what wickedness drives you to that accursed place?"
"Where I'm from, I heard stories about the Pharaoh's tomb. They say it's the largest building in the world, and that it's been growing larger, built upon by masons every year since the old king died millennia ago. I'd like to see the inside. I want to see the city of the dead, built for a population of one." The old man cackles, wheezing. He waves his hands around in the air as if to plead with you to stop. He clutches his chest and tries to compose himself.
"Do not make an old man laugh so hard. I have a weak heart."
"It's not a joke, old man. I'm willing to pay a king's ransom for this opportunity." To prove your point, you empty the contents of your small satchel onto the table. Bronze ingots, stamped with images of lions, crocodiles, and jackals, catch the eye of Memnon. But the old man pays the precious metal no mind. "What? Not enough?"
"Quite the contrary. That is more than enough to buy one's way into the afterlife."
"You're the one joking now. It's just a tomb, old man." The old man reclines in his chair and begins to fan himself furiously. He flashes a grin that is more fleshy than toothy, and clutching one hand to his chest, he begins to cackle. Even Memnon seems put off by the old man's manner and tries to calm him, only to be swatted back by the palm frond.
"Do not disturb that terrible man's sleep. The old king was a bastard when he tread across the desert in his day, and he is a demon now. His ka wandering those corridors for all eternity."
You've had enough, and to get straight to the matter, you slide the ingots towards Memnon. You lean back, folding your arms across your chest, and make one final offer. "This is half. You get the rest when I'm safe and back in Thebes." Memnon deliberates, shuffling in his seat. He looks to his grandfather and is met with a stern look. You wrap your fingers on the table and fix your gaze on Memnon. The young man buries his face in his hands and then sets his hands on the ingots.
"I will not enter with you. I will show you where to enter. I will furnish you with all the tools you will need. I will meet you back in Thebes once you are done with your foolish adventure. Nothing more."
Satisfied, you nod and rise from the table. You bow to Memnon and the old man. "When can we do this?"
"Come at dawn for your goods. The high priest will be offering up the fruits of the empire in the evening. The ceremony will take place at the necropolis. All Thebes and the countryside will be there. The guards will be there in great numbers too, but even they cannot patrol the entire complex."
And with that, you nod and walk out, your lips curling into a satisfied sneer. And the old man's wheezing laugh follows you out as you disappear back into the chaos of the spice market. The procession moves in disciplined silence, with even the sounds of footfall reduced to almost nothing by the measured steps of every participant. 2,000 men all march together, sparing not a word to their neighbor as they advance down the megalithic ramp, down into the Valley of the King. You touch a hand to where your forehead should be, desperate to wipe the sweat away, but you're met with the cold touch of metal from the Anubis mask you're laboring under. You fall out of step for an instant, and someone strikes you from behind with a reed. You quickly correct your pace and continue on without a word. From the two eye holes in the mask, you can make out thousands of torches, all held aloft by the devotees, and in the faint and flickering glow of the flame, you can make out the principal object of adoration in this ancient valley. In your time, this was the resting place of many kings and queens of Egypt, great names like Thutmose, Ramses, and Tutankhamun. In this time, the entirety of the valley is at the disposal of one pharaoh. Where in your time there were several temples carved into the rock, here, a titanic necropolis dominates the valley. It is a true city of the dead. You turn your neck with some difficulty and peer up at the guardian statues which rise along the cliff faces on either side of the valley. All the statues represent one god, his visage here represented by an animal not found in nature, but in the wild imagination of the high priests of Egypt. And the statues are the Set animal, with a long, curving snout and tall, thin ears like a misshapen rabbit. This primordial god of chaos, carved 8 times in stone, looks down upon the complex with his threatening gaze. The necropolis truly is a city, with a wide central street flanked by colonnades, all leading up to a central temple complex. There are carefully cultivated ponds, gardens, and courtyards with large stelae and statues serving as their centerpieces in each area. You canal carries water from a reservoir some distance away, down the ramp and up the main street toward the temple. This canal widens at the base of the ramp, accommodating a ceremonial bark which rests with its oars up. The procession reaches the boat and pauses as the high priest mounts it and places offerings of fruit, meat, and bread onto a raised seat, a throne fit for the king. Rowers board the ship and set it in motion, carrying it down the canal. In time, the procession begins again, moving with muted steps down the main street. How grotesque a sight it must be to see thousands of men with the heads of jackals, crocodiles, and hippopotami moving in lockstep among the cyclopean architecture. Finally reaching the entrance of the temple, you watch as the ship disappears into the gaping portal, gliding along the water and into the absolute darkness of the interior. So vast is the temple that even at its entrance, the light of thousands of flickering torches cannot penetrate to the far wall. Incantations are chanted, and you stay silent throughout the entirety of the ritual, counting on the fanatical devotion and the passionate recitations of the faithful to conceal your ignorance of the rite. Your translator struggles to decipher some of the sounds, hinting at words and concepts belonging to some elder language from the untold eons of Kemet's past. You join the faithful as they prostrate themselves before the temple, touching their masks to the ground and keeping them there until the rhythmic beating of oars heralds the return of the bark and the high priest. You stand tall with all the faithful once more and hear the final pronunciation of the high priest from behind his set mask. May his Ka endure forever. And with that, the ceremony concludes. Men pull their masks from their heads and begin a disorganized march back toward the ramp. Here is the opportunity you've been looking for all night. As men push and shove past each other, they draw the eyes of numerous sentinels watching from the balconies of large buildings. You stick out a foot and trip a man, sending him crashing into the crowd around him. Men shove and clamber over each other as the incident sows chaos in their ranks. Seizing the moment, you press yourself through the crowd, keeping your head low. You emerge into the cover of a narrow street, and after proceeding down a fair distance and confirming that you're far beyond the prying eyes of the guards, you catch your breath. You're moving again within a minute, keeping low, checking your corners, and studiously avoiding open areas in the necropolis. Once you're well and far away from the temple entrance, you begin a steady ascent, clambering up wooden scaffolding along the side of a new temple complex. You reach the top and quickly take cover behind a large pile of rope. Peering out and across the valley, you see only the pinprick lights of the faithful and the guards. Here, you lay exposed to the frigid desert wind. There is not another soul.
What took you so long?
You startle, throwing your hand over your mouth to stifle a scream. Memnon emerges from the darkness of the corridor on the main floor of the structure.
I have been here for hours.
How's that?
Come and see for yourself.
Memnon leads you into the corridor and into the gaping darkness of the building. Recovering his own burning torch from a pile of sandstone bricks, Memnon hands you an unlit torch and sets it ablaze with a touch of his own. In the faint glow of the twin flames, you can just about make out the interior of the temple. It's large, with two floors. You're standing on what is essentially a balcony, which overlooks the inner sanctum below. You notice that a large area in the center of the room sits at a much lower level and features four corners which are fed by carved channels. You imagine that the builders plan to fill the central depression with water to create a pool of some sort. Memnon leads you along the balcony and down a flight of steps carved into the far wall. You continue along until you find a spot covered by a heavy blanket. Memnon removes the blanket, revealing a deep, gaping hole and a large iron nail set into the floor around which a rope is tied.
This shaft will supply water to the underground complex once we have connected it to the Nile. I hid here at the end of my workday until I heard nothing more of laborers or guards.
How far down does it go?
Go and see for yourself.
Memnon steps over to a small pile of mud bricks and removes a few from the top, revealing an oxhide pack. He tosses the pack to you.
Everything you need is in there.
Within a moment, you've tied a rope around your waist and to the iron nail. You gaze into the vast, yawning darkness of the shaft. And, nodding to Memnon and muttering a silent prayer to yourself, you slip down into the darkness of the underworld.
What you just heard was May His Ka Live Forever by Kevin Valbenesi. If you enjoyed this story and you want to keep Kevin on with us, head on over to Patreon and sign up to be a member. We're building the podcast by building the members area, and proceeds are going towards professional storytelling podcasters like Kevin Valbenesi, like Josh Hutchins, and there are a couple other guys I'm talking to right now to produce even more stories for you once we hit our milestones. I just launched a half-hour show for members, the third installment of our members-only series called Blue Dragons. It takes place in an extremely exotic world, millions of years in the past, and in a very foreign universe. There's high-tech and low-tech, jungle creatures, and massive atmospheric regulators. I'm also flying by the seat of my pants because, honestly, I got you in some pretty deep trouble in the story, and I have no idea how I'm going to get you out. You can check that out, as well as tons of other stories only available to members, by visiting twilighthistories.com and clicking on the page called Members. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to The Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.